Now, from the left coast to the D.C. Beltway, covering the topics you love to hate and hate to miss, it's the Silk or Joe Show.
Welcome, everybody. Welcome to the Silk or Joe Show. Co-host Joe with you all today, September 12th, for those of you listening for the first time, because that's when this show is released, but it is being recorded September 10th. I do have to preface that, because Lord knows what could happen between now and then. Possibly some disgusting acts of celebration by Democrats for the 25th anniversary of 9/11. Certainly today, the day of Charlie Kirk's anniversary, the assassination of killing him, Democrats are out there celebrating that as well. So who knows what we'll see tomorrow? Who knows what people Democrats let into the country under the Biden administration will do to honor tomorrow? But that is tomorrow from my perspective, yesterday from yours. Anyway, the Silk or Joe Show, it comes to you courtesy of the Main Street Radio Network, so I want to thank the Main Street Radio Network for that. You can find out more about them, mainstreetradionetwork.com. You'll find out more about the Silk or Joe Show as well, podcasts for the show, and the Al Nathan Show podcast for that. The Al Nathan Show is another show that we do. It's all at mainstreetradionetwork.com. We got an app for Android users as well, and we are on social media, Facebook at Main Street Radio Network, X at Main Street Radio, and we want to thank the Salem Radio Network for distributing the show, whether it's to affiliates who air it or whether it's the stream on the web, but not the podcasts. The Salem Radio Network does not do that. We do. But let's get right into this here. I've got the rest of the show filled with guests, so that's something to look forward to. Miscellaneous guests on about various topics, and as you can tell by me suppressing a cough here, I'm in a little under the weather this week because I inhaled some Lysol, and probably by September 12th, it's all cured, but September 10th is where I'm at right now, and it's still bugging me. Anyway, it has been a somber week for us here in America. 25 years ago were the 9/11 attacks. America was unified. Everyone acknowledged evil in the world. But where are we 25 years later? In New York City, this year, we'll have a Muslim state senator representing them who said New Yorkers deserve to die. America deserved the 9/11 attacks. The Muslim mayor of New York City gave the pen he used to sign the 25th anniversary 9/11 Remembrance Proclamation to the lawyer for a member of Al-Qaeda. In fact, that lawyer represented the brother-in-law of one of the 9/11 attackers, and or planners, that is. And there's Muslim candidates out there right now, and people from Congress, from other states other than New York, who've downplayed the 9/11 attacks, and rather than responding to the victims, instead make the occasion about themselves and turn themselves into the real victims. Forget the thousands killed. You must embrace Sharia to empower the real victims, the Islamic ideology of jihad that motivated the attacks. And you're a bigot if you even point out what motivated the attacks. Did you happen to listen to yesterday's Al Nathan show, at least as it has been planned? It's planned to be, and should have been, if God willing, a rerun from September 12th, 2001. Did you hear the anguish and the horror, the rage? And now adherents to that same ideology behind the attacks are elected to office and criticize Americans for daring to blame that ideology. A poll from 2023, 3 years ago, showed that 30% of Gen Zers think bin Laden was a force for good. That number could only have increased now. We see the Democrat Party embracing even more people like this as office holders, candidates, and spokespeople for their campaigns. They would only do that if it was getting more and more popularity as an ideology. We have Muslim-ran cities right now telling Christians they are not welcome, and police harassing Christians that dare stand up against this invasion by an anti-American ideology. It's ironic. Repeatedly, we see that a majority of Muslims worldwide and in America say we should be under Sharia. Even some candidates Democrats are running for office today say we should be under Sharia, and they are adherents to it. Yet liberals call you bigoted for pointing it out, the same liberals who say that if you are Jewish, you must be an Israel supporter and therefore support genocide. Those same liberals refuse to fathom Sharia and its support amongst most Muslims. They allow skin color to determine the acceptability of hatred. Jews are white, so you can hate them. Muslims are not, so they are innocent. So much so that liberals forget the very tenets of their party. Feminism, for example. You know, feminists, they're out there, they love Lindsey Clancy. Consider her story empowering. Strangle three kids and get away with it? Absolutely, it's empowering to them. They say so. They complain all the time on social media about how they're just like her, but had only a hair more self-control and seem to regret that they did, and seem to wish that if they had less self-control, they could get away with murdering their children. Well, if Lindsey Clancy did what she did in a Muslim country, she'd have been murdered before making it to trial, and under Islamic law, this would have been acceptable. But try telling that to one of the feminists who grabbed an AR to defend Sharia from peaceful protesters in Michigan, and then likely a few weeks later is now outside the courthouse protesting in favor of Lindsey Clancy. We'll get back to her in a moment, though. But there was another anniversary this week, the assassination of Charlie Kirk. Is it any surprise that the same people out there saying America deserved 9/11 spent September 10th celebrating the anniversary of Charlie Kirk's assassination? His big crime was that he was good at debating liberals and showing the idiocy and fallacies of their beliefs. It seems a majority of the Democrat Party does not believe in free speech. Even before his assassination, a majority of Democrats wanted to see assassinations of conservative figures. Why would we be shocked when they celebrate such an assassination of a peaceful man merely showing liberals that their slogans and ideology are as empty as their heads? He did no violence to them, but therein lies the problem. Violence has been redefined. The 9/11 attacks are not violence. They're glorious resistance, just like the October 7th massacres in Israel. Lindsey Clancy strangling her three children as they fought for their lives was not violence. That was empowerment of women. But Charlie Kirk saying things, speaking, that is violence so dangerous that he deserved to die for it. In 2 months, half the country is going to show they believe this with their votes. About the only comfort we may take is that there will be some earthly retribution when the Islamic Jihad we were united against 25 years ago finally takes over, the murderous left-wing monsters who enabled it in the name of tolerance, which they only extend toward the most evil impulses of humans because to them evil is good and good is evil, those monsters will be executed because that's what Islam does to its secular allies. Unfortunately, the price paid for this is that the largest caliphate on the planet will have nuclear weapons and a suicidal ideology that would call for their use in global jihad. Just look to Iran for the history on this topic, whether it's Islam eliminating secular allies on the left or that what happens when they get put into power and what their goal of nuclear domination looks like. So here we are after 25 years of 9/11. I have to wonder if some of the trendier liberals out there made this a four-day weekend for themselves, starting the celebrations with Charlie Kirk's assassination, continuing the celebrations for 9/11, and we'll see these people winning in November. In the name of compassion, of course. Supporting the butcher of innocent Americans by terrorists is compassionate. Supporting the assassination of a father who speaks to people in compassion is compassion. Supporting a mother who strangles her children to death is compassion. In 25 years, our society evolved into something that rewards perceived victimhood and embraces compassion towards them. If you can take a position that puts you in the perceived minority, you are now a victim and must be heard. It's the compassionate thing to do. You are above reproach. And you are not responsible for your actions. Activists who ran out of civil rights to champion instead turned to inventing victimhoods and oppressed beliefs because they saw this as a path to higher social status. Capitalism is no longer how we lift ourselves up. Pretending to be a victim and demanding society give you everything in the name of compassion is how we lift ourselves out of poverty. And look how well it worked. BLM grifters bilked hundreds of millions of dollars from hardworking Americans and corporations, yet not a cent made its way down to black communities that were struggling. Instead, it went to paying for mansions and nepotism. The worst kind of greed and narcissism are rewarded. There will always be a new frontier of victimhood if you have no moral compass. Now we're at the point where Charlie Kirk debating you makes you the victim and makes him a target for assassination. We're at the point where Muslims launch genocidal terrorist attacks, but we have to say the Muslims are the real victims. We're at the point where a mother who strangles her children and spends her entire trial stewing in anger and hate with not a single instant of regret is the real victim, not the three children she killed. We're at the point where pedophiles are given pardons if their skin color dictates that they are the real victims. You may have heard me laughing about this next example on the Al Nathan Show earlier this week, but we are also at the point where people are claiming that fat people are the victim of a genocide because of what activists call fascist weight loss drugs. No one's even dying. People are getting healthier and living longer, and that constitutes a genocide to the left. These are what victims look like 1 year after the assassination of Charlie Kirk, 25 years after the 9/11 attacks. And to make way for modern victims, the ones of the past must be downplayed or forgotten, or turned into villains. And half of the country will, out of blind party loyalty and lazy attitudes towards our democracy, vote for the forces behind this in November. If you look at our primaries and local races where these modern victims win, you see the common thread of total disengagement from normal people. People just aren't showing up to vote. They don't care. they're apathetic, or the candidates are absolutely god-awful horrible, and the only people showing up are these activists, the crazy ones, the energized ones, the ones who believe in murder, the ones who believe in killing your political opponents, the ones who invent genocides, and the ones who invent morality just to justify the worst parts of themselves. You wonder why the left would favor all this evil so much. It's because they want to feel like they're good people. So to bury the evil in themselves, they instead try to redefine society so that there is no evil in themselves. Evil is good. Therefore, they are good people, even when they have these bad impulses or succumb to them. They're still good people. And these are the ones who are winning these elections because regular people just can't be bothered to vote. But the radicals, they're out there. They're crazy. They're energized. And once we get to November, you're going to be stuck with these radical candidates and this system we have where there's only two parties to choose from, and people will still choose their own party despite the radicals in it just because they're so scared of the other side or because they just feel there is no real alternative anyway. More Silk or Joe Show coming up after this break.
For many young Americans, making decisions about the future can be overwhelming. That's why the U.S. Army's newest campaign is inviting audiences into the field, the real-world training environments where soldiers gain the skills they need to take on any challenge that lies ahead. Here with more on the field-tested campaign is Sergeant Major of the Army Michael R. Weimer.
The field is our office. It's where training becomes real and soldiers find out what they're made of. By mastering the fundamentals, solving hard problems, and leading under pressure. Field Tested shows audiences what it means to be a soldier. A great teammate who's brilliant at the basics and doesn't back down from a challenge. The field is where we build warfighters.
For more information on how you can get field tested and be all you can be through Army service, visit GoArmy.com.
A new study finds a major increase in STEM learning in after-school programs, but gaps remain. Today, 92% of parents with children in after-school say STEM is available, up from 69% a decade ago. That's 6.4 million kids now getting STEM in after-school. Emma Benet, Overdeck Family Foundation.
This study underscores the remarkable work out-of-school time programs do to help students discover the joy in learning while preparing them to succeed now and into the future.
The study finds rural and low-income students are less likely to get frequent STEM opportunities, with rural programs also offering fewer opportunities in computer science and technology. Jody Grant, Executive Director of the After School Alliance.
STEM literacy is no longer optional. It's the foundation of nearly every aspect of our economy and our world.
The next step is clear. Invest more in after-school programs so every child in every community has access to STEM learning after school. To learn more, visit afterschoolalliance.org, sponsored by After School Alliance.
Hey, what's up, everybody? I'm Jason Derulo. I love that music connects to people all over the country. But unfortunately, so does something else. Childhood hunger. 15 million kids struggle with hunger right here in America. And yet, every year, billions of pounds of surplus food in the U.S. go to waste instead of going to the children in need. Feeding America is working to change this. The Feeding America nationwide network of food banks rescues this surplus of food to help provide meals to families in virtually every community in the United States, including yours. But they just can't do this alone. Join me in the fight against hunger in America. For more information on what you can do to get involved, visit feedingamerica.org. That's feedingamerica.org. Together we can solve hunger. Together, we're feeding America. A message from Feeding America and the Ad Council.
The mission of Paralyzed Veterans of America is clear. Accessibility. Veterans who have served and sacrificed the best of themselves deserve access to the best our country has to offer. Access to meaningful employment. Access to the veterans' benefits they've earned. Accessible homes and vehicles. And access to every part of their communities. With PVA staff working inside VA hospitals, no other veterans organization has provided more real-time, ongoing support for paralyzed veterans and their families. PVA is proud to serve veterans across all branches, all generations and all conflicts. Our nation's heroes fought for your independence. Join PVA in fighting for theirs at pva.org.
Welcome back to the Silver Joe Show, everybody. Co-host Joe with y'all today. We are joined for this segment by Michael Morris. It's been about a month since he was last on the program. He is director at the Media Research Center's Free Speech America. Michael Morris, welcome back. How are you today?
Thank you for having me on the show. Really appreciate it.
Yep, glad to have you. So as we are now less than two months from the midterm election day, the media, of course, they've been out there being rather biased. What is it that y'all at the Media Research Center have been seeing?
Yeah, look, you know, it's time and time again, anti-Trump smears, it's anti-conservative bias, it's bias by omission, so stories that should be covered are not being covered, and then when they do cover stories, it's overwhelmingly viewed from the leftist slant.
Yeah, their favorite thing to do is to, at least for my local news, I see it time and again, they'll say, the Trump administration is doing X, and then they'll present a bunch of leftist talking heads saying this, that, and the other thing, or they'll interview citizens on the street who probably were just, you know, given a three-word summary of the event and react to it, and they don't present anything from the other side, as if this is unbiased coverage.
Yeah, absolutely right. You know, and we've got a couple of studies out here recently, one on 60 Minutes, 60 Minutes and a 5-to-1 leftist slant, 78 liberal stories compared to just 16 conservative ones across six separate seasons. All right, 5-to-1 leftist slant there on CBS's 60 Minutes. It's gotten slightly better since Barry Weiss took over, but overwhelmingly terrible during the 2020 election cycle and in the 2024 election cycle. In fact, there were 17 liberal stories during the 2020 election cycle that were overwhelmingly framed in a negative light against President Donald Trump, and then 20 liberal stories during the 2024 campaign that were a leftist slant against the Trump administration and his agendas.
And the journalists, they seem to have an absolute blind spot. They don't see this as bias. They just seem to see it as reporting the news, because they will tell you, I've heard plenty of quotes online that from media figures saying there is no such thing as liberal bias. We just report the truth. And some even go so far as to laughably suggest maybe there should be a liberal bias and they should somehow be even more biased in their reporting.
Absolutely incredible. And look, you know, what we found here was that actually 75% of the liberal slanted stories came from three correspondents that have now been fired by CBS: Sharon Alfonsi, Scott Pelley, and Cecilia Vega, and kind of underscoring this liberal bias that has been exemplified on CBS's 60 Minutes. You've got Scott Pelley, for example, who had in the 2020-2021 season, Mr. Woodward, the president, that's quote unquote. Scott Pelley was joined by journalist Bob Woodward, who said, you know, you reach an editorial conclusion at the end of this book, something that reporters are not supposed to do. Woodward replied, yes, I say the president is the wrong man for the job, unquote. So clear, overt, anti-Trump, leftist bias there on the 60 Minutes interview between Scott Pelley and Bob Woodward.
Yeah, and these are establishment folks in the media. We can only guess that these are the folks that they're being held as the example for how journalists are. So the new crops of journalists, they're going to get even more leftward in their bias because they're being encouraged. Well, here are these figures who are doing it. Obviously, this is how it's done.
Yeah, look, and you know, liberal figures receive flattering puff pieces, and conservative politicians, Republicans, et cetera, face aggressive questioning and hostile framing, and we see that over and over and over again on 60 Minutes and other elitist media segments as well. But it's not just them; it's also across what we call here at the Media Research Center the news apps, or the big three news apps, also including Yahoo News. So we've got Apple News, Google News, Microsoft's MSN, and Yahoo News. And you know, have they been interfering in elections? Well, if you look at the number of stories coming from left-leaning sources versus the number of stories being put out by these news aggregators from right-leaning sources, the answer to that question seems obvious. Yes, because 68% of the time they're pumping out stories from the left, and only 5% of the time are they pumping out stories from the right.
Mm. And here we are sitting on the today we're recording this interview on the first anniversary of the assassination of Charlie Kirk, and this is going to be airing on Saturday. But you all at the Media Research Center, you did a study that found only like 1 in 4 people even knew the leanings of the assassination and the motives of the assassination. And I would say that that is attributable to a failure of whether it's the mainstream media or these algorithms in providing accurate information to people.
Yeah, it's truly disheartening. And, you know, what's incredible, we looked this morning and actually Microsoft's MSN actually refused to cover the two biggest stories of the day today in its morning feed. So you've got the GOP midterm convention where Trump was speaking last night. And then this is, as you mentioned, the anniversary of Charlie Kirk's assassination. And in the top 20 morning feed this morning across Microsoft's MSN, it didn't push anything about either one of those stories. Instead, it showed its viewers stories about an OnlyFans creator, why Jerry Seinfeld doesn't like Lexus cars, and tricks for creating juicy beef. I mean, this is the sort of drivel that you get when you're not getting, you know, leftist garbage shoved down your throat. You're getting nonsense instead.
Right. And if there was a Democrat convention happening today, if this were the anniversary of the assassination of, I don't know, if Joe Biden was assassinated last year, that would be all over those news feeds. But that's not, because instead you're getting this drivel because they don't want you. These algorithms seem tuned to prevent you from learning about conservative perspectives.
Yeah, absolutely right. And, you know, Apple News, while it did cover Charlie Kirk's death, it used NPR. So leftist NPR was the source that it turned to talk about conservative icon Charlie Kirk. And Google News, for its part, who did it rely on? None other than the New York Times. So anti-conservative New York Times is who Google News thinks that the American people want to read from when talking about Charlie Kirk. I mean, it's just crazy, the spin that you get from these big tech oligarchs out there in Silicon Valley, and then they're relying on the elitist media out of NPR and the New York Times. I mean, outrageous.
It's almost like if they feel that they are forced to cover a story, if they can't just bury it because it's too big, they'll turn to a severely biased outlet so that people will hate the story as much as they do.
Yeah, absolutely right. Absolutely right. And look, you know, just going down the list here, Apple News, we looked at November 1st, 2025 through September 6th, 2026. Apple News was by far the worst in regards to how much information and news that they shared from right-leaning outlets. Only 1% of the stories emanating from Apple News, and this is according to All Sides Media Bias Ratings, only 1% of the stories that Apple News puts out came from right-leaning outlets. That's 65 stories out of over 5,800 during that time period. So 65 out of 5,800. I mean, that is incredible. Google News wasn't much better. It had 3% of the articles that was promoted across Google News. That's 185 articles out of somewhere around 5,300. Microsoft's MSN, we'll say, is the least bad, but even it only pumped out 12% of the stories from right-leaning outlets. And then Yahoo, for its part, you know, it actually is the worst in terms of how many stories that it pumps out from the left. 77% of the stories that it pumps out come from left-leaning outlets. Just incredible bias from these Silicon Valley tech giants.
Mm. And as conservatives, we can't just dismiss it as private industry or as being a non-event because, well, this is how a lot of people are getting their news. But Michael Morris, appreciate you joining us. 10 seconds left. Where can listeners find out more about the Media Research Center?
Yeah, check us out at mrcfreespeechamerica.org. Again, that's mrcfreespeechamerica.org. Thank you so much for having me on the show. Greatly appreciate it.
Thank you for being on. Listeners, more after the break.
Federally funded cancer research has saved the lives of millions of Americans, but future progress is at risk. Here's Dr. Julie Grelow, Executive Vice President and Chief Medical Officer of the American Society of Clinical Oncology, with more.
Federal research is the reason cancer death rates have dropped by a third since the 1960s. It's funded breast and colorectal cancer detection methods, innovative immunotherapies, and turned childhood leukemia into a disease where 9 out of 10 kids now survive. But proposed budget cuts and federal grant rule changes threaten the core of our research system, putting this progress at risk.
The impact of funding cuts would reach far beyond the lab.
Without federal cancer research funding, the pace of new treatments will slow, and our brightest scientists will be forced out of the field. Congress has until September 30th to ensure that we keep up our momentum. We need people to speak up now before we lose the progress we fought so hard to make.
To learn more, visit asco.org/save research.
High upfront costs prevent families from switching wireless providers. T-Mobile is changing that with new 2.0 plans with EIP Flex, a first-of-its-kind 36-month flexible financing option that covers device, taxes, and fees at checkout. For a limited time, well-qualified customers can score a new phone and pay nothing upfront, zero out-of-pocket, and 0% APR. Plus, T-Mobile's new student perks plans start at $30 a month with autopay, 40% less than Verizon and AT&T. Bundle 5G home internet for $30 a month and receive a $200 virtual prepaid card. Learn more at T-Mobile.com, sponsored by T-Mobile. EIP Flex for well-qualified customers on eligible devices. Student 18 and up eligibility verification required. Otherwise, plan converts to standard pricing at additional cost. 40% based on comparable plans. Plan features like hotspot international data and taxes and fees vary. Bundle with $20 in monthly bill credits. Qualifying credit, student perks voice line, and new internet line required. Virtual card typically takes 15 days. No cash access and expires in 6 months. Card issued by Sunrise Banks N.A. member FDIC. Visit T-Mobile.com.
The U.S. spends more on education per student than nearly any country in the world. So why do students still feel unprepared for the jobs ahead? CEO of ETS, Amit Sivak, has more.
AI is reshaping career paths faster than our educational system can keep up. According to ETS's 2026 Human Progress Report, about half of American workers feel underprepared for the next generation of jobs. That's a wake-up call for how we deliver learning and measure readiness.
As students head back to school,
we need to modernize how we measure learning. We need real accountability and competency-based education, so that students graduate ready for the jobs employers actually have. The states aligning education with workforce demands are the ones seeing better outcomes for all their students.
For more, visit ETS.org.
Steven.
Who said that?
Me, down here.
What are you, a yellow booger?
I'm a banana slug, Steven.
Well, what are you doing in my room?
I'm your sense of adventure. Don't you remember me? Don't you know that we miss you?
Miss me? Who misses me?
You know, all your friends in the forest. The trees, the pond, that little fort that you made out of branches. We all miss you.
Mom took me to the forest last year.
I'm a slug, Steven. It took me a long time to get here.
Oh, I guess that makes sense.
The forest is not that far away. Have an adventure today. I'm sure your mom would take you.
You're right. I should get out. I want to have fun. Play in puddles, catch frogs, and climb trees. Hey, Mom!
Yeah, hon?
Steven! What is that in your hand?
It's my sense of adventure, Mom. It's telling me we need to get out of the house and have some fun in nature today.
Come to the forest where the more adventurous you lives. Check out discovertheforest.org for cool places nearby. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
No word in the English language is less convincing than probably.
Are you sure we should get matching tattoos on our first date?
Sure. We'll probably stay together.
Probably? It's been 23 minutes since I ate. I can probably swim.
You should wait 30 minutes.
Okay, now tell me what to do. Cannonball! Cramp! Oh, I have a cramp. I can probably hit the green from here.
Probably.
Can I get a mulligan?
Ready to go?
Hey, are you sure you're okay to drive?
Yeah, I'm pretty sober. Yeah, I'm probably okay.
Probably okay isn't okay, especially when it comes to drinking and driving. If you're drinking, call a cab, a car, or a friend. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to the Silver Joe Show, everybody. Co-host Joe with y'all today. And we are joined now by Nate Myers from the Committee for a Constructive Tomorrow. He's their Collegian National Field Direct Coordinator. Before working for CFACT, he served as development coordinator for the Heartland Institute. I think we had someone from them last week. And Tennessee State Chair for Young Americans for Liberty. And I just knocked something over. Nate Myers, how are you today?
Hey, doing well. How about yourself?
Yep, I'm doing okay. Now, you have over at CFAC.org, there's a piece out there titled Nearly 90% of Students at Two U.S. Universities Fake Progressive Views for Professors and Friends. I mean, if 90% are faking views for professors and friends, you know, either that 10% is, you know, how many of those people are they faking them for actually are faking views themselves? You know, is it like if they have a group of 10 friends, it's like nine friends faking their views for one?
Yeah, and I believe the article termed that the feedback loop from hell, and I think that's exactly right. I think we have a lot of pressures in our society, especially as young people, to conform to a very progressive model of thinking, and I think our educational systems really reinforce that to the, you know, the umpth degree. Personally, working with college students all across the United States, I've come in contact with students that have told me, you know, absolute horror stories, whether it's, you know, being forced to take a gender studies course as a core class, like as core curriculum, to being singled out by their professor and made to stand up while they berate them about their conservative views. It's no wonder to me that a lot of students are hiding their true feelings on certain subjects.
Right, because it, regardless of how you perform in the class, you could be objectively the best student, understand the material, and, you know, even if you had a multiple choice test, get all the answers right, the professor could still flunk you just because of their feelings about you.
Yep, exactly. I've also had other students tell me that they have had to, you know, tailor their research papers to the view of the professor. And I didn't think I was this old, you know, I'm only 31, but I remember when I was in college, I never had to do anything like that. You know, maybe I went to, you know, I did go to a smaller private Christian university, so maybe I was somewhat sheltered there, but it just kind of flabbergasts me that people are having, you know, like that professors would even share their opinions on politics. Like, I guess I'm old enough to remember when, you know, the intent with a professor is that you never really know what their political stance is. You know, a good professor should have you guessing the entire time you take their course as to what, you know, as to what their political opinions actually are. But that age is apparently dead in the United States because we have students actively trying to conform to what their professor wants to hear, not, you know, to think critically and to think out loud.
Yeah. And meanwhile, liberals and leftists out there are still saying that, you know, people go to college and become leftists because that's the intelligent, educated thing to do. But if that's the case, why would you feel pressure to conform instead of pressure to be silent instead of pressure to argue your ideas openly? I mean, if the more intelligent thing to do is to be a leftist, then surely their arguments could withstand scrutiny. Instead, here we are taping this on the anniversary of Charlie Kirk's assassination, where they're celebrating a debater who was assassinated.
No, it's the irony is never lost on me that, you know, they cheer and celebrate the death of someone as nice and kind as Charlie Kirk. Yet they turn around and say, you know, why are conservatives so angry? You know, why is there all this hate? And it's like, well, number one, you know, we're not hateful. And but number two, we are angry, and we're usually angry because you're celebrating the death of very moderate people on our side. And that's very ugly behavior. But at any rate, yeah, no, they're definitely afraid to show their true feelings. And, you know, it's a wonder why. I myself have been attacked on college campuses through the course of my job, just trying to help students table and debate. And things of that nature, and, you know, physically assaulted, had our booth torn up, you know, destruction of property and such. So it's the left does not want an open debate. They do not seek, you know, differing opinions, and there is certainly not an iron sharpening iron going on college campuses. It is definitely, you know, 1984, Orwell's, you know, conform, 5 minutes of hate type of vibe.
Yeah, I recall 12 years ago, 11 years ago, I can't remember the exact year. It was definitely before the 2016 election and the 2016 races. I mean, it must have been before July of 2015, but I saw it was from Harvard University, I believe. It was like their school newspaper had an op-ed section, and someone contributed an opinion that basically the gist of it was, liberals are right about everything. Why should there be a debate? And that went from just being confined to the op-ed section in Harvard to being the policy, the norm.
Wow. Yeah. No, I think you're exactly right. Well, and, you know, that's the problem with a feedback loop and an echo chamber is that, you know, eventually you don't even realize that you are in one. And so I think we really run the risk of that now. But I think there's hope. I think especially Gen Z is especially sensitive to the propaganda and the forced conformity. So I think there's going to be, you know, a shift in this. You know, I hope it doesn't mean that we have to completely do away with our current education system and start from scratch. But nonetheless, in my opinion, I think the silver lining to this is that we've reached the saturation point with this kind of forced conformity, and students are really starting to wake up to it. I mean, I know, for instance, CFACT works a lot on the climate change issue, pushing back against the left narrative on climate change and that it's an anthropogenic or man-made crisis. We've seen a ton of interest from young people on this subject. They know they're being sold, you know, a bag of, you know, ill goods on this, and they're starting to seek out, you know, alternative viewpoints on this. We regularly host debates, educational seminars, guest speakers, all sorts of stuff across the country, and we get students coming out to these events in droves. So, while yes, there is, you know, obviously, you know, by reading the article, a high percentage of them conforming and espousing views that they may not necessarily agree with in order to fit in. But the tide is certainly changing in our favor as far as, you know, core beliefs.
And I guess the other question, though, becomes how much of that acting ends up just becoming part of your character until you eventually convince yourself to have those views?
Yeah, well, and, you know, that's like the old saying, you tell yourself a lie long enough, it eventually becomes the truth. So I do think there is a risk of that. But the good news is that college is only 4 years, you know, so it only lasts, you know, ideally, if you do everything right. But, you know, so for most people, that is a short period of their life. And then I also think getting out into the real world kind of helps, you know, course correct with some of these students. So they realize that, you know, not everything that they learned in the classroom actually is applicable to real life. And I think the students who... Yeah, go ahead.
I'm just going to have to cut in and say that attitude there. I think that's part of how we got these Democratic Socialists of America who are sweeping the Democrat primaries right now, because that we had that attitude about those people like 10 years ago. Oh, it's just confined to a college campus. When real life hits, it'll hit hard. And then these people come out, a lot of them college educated, but they can't get a job with their degree. So their solution isn't, well, real life, I wasn't prepared. Their solution is, I need to reshape this into a communist country so that I can succeed, like my professors told me.
Yeah, no, I certainly agree. There is an element of that. But like with the article, you know, I think there's only that small percentage, you know, that 7% that actually believe in the gender spectrum, like from the article. I think those are the people that are going out into the world and saying, oh, I need to reshape this. Now, sure, you know, the average student is still coming out more than left of center on some of these issues, and perhaps they're still too browbeaten and trained after college not to speak up on these things. But I think if we can reorient some of the narratives in our society towards a more sane perspective, these people who are too shy to speak up will be more comfortable in espousing their more, you know, not to use a term from the left, but more, you know, heteronormative perspective, thankfully.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think, you know, perhaps the cutting of USAID and other ways that organizations supporting this stuff, cutting funding to them has been helpful to this end as well, because now it's just up to the colleges and, you know, the professors touting their stuff. You don't have all these extra groups throwing money at the problem, and colleges, they go where the money is.
Yes, sir. Yeah, and I think there's nothing wrong with a little bit of, you know, actual free market capitalism involved with that. You know, if these students are, if these universities are having to teach courses based off of what is bringing in the most tuition money, then I think they'll find very quickly that no one really cares about taking a gender studies course, or, you know, no one cares about feminism and tiger conservation or something like that. You know, like they want the core mechanical courses that are going to get them a good job, a good paying job after they get out of college.
Hmm. And that's ultimately what we need at a college, going back to a restoration of that process so that of just getting people into good paying jobs instead of giving them degrees in ideology.
Yes. And that is the biggest change that we need to make in this country. because I think it's going to be, you know, only to our detriment. You know, more adversarial countries around the world are not doing that sort of thing. China, Russia, you name it.
Right. Well, Nate Myers, appreciate you joining the show. About 15 seconds left. Where can listeners find more of your work?
Yeah, so they can go to CFACT Campus, CFACTCampus.org, /news. You can check out all of the latest events from our students there.
All right, well, thank you for being on. Listeners, something for you to check out during the break, but we got more show on the other side.
As artificial intelligence becomes more common in the workplace, new research suggests accessibility may be falling behind. Kelly Herman, Vice President of Accessibility and Student Affairs at University of Phoenix, has more.
AI can help create more accessible experiences through tools like captions, transcripts, and plain language summaries. But to truly benefit everyone, accessibility needs to be considered at the beginning when tools and policies are created.
A new University of Phoenix survey found 45% of workers say accessibility is missing or unclear in their workplace AI policies, and only 25% say the AI tools available through work or professional learning support people with disabilities very well.
Responsible AI requires more than adopting new technology. Organizations need accessible tools, employee support, and human oversight to help make sure AI works for everyone.
To learn more about the AI Accessibility Survey, visit phoenix.edu/AI accessibility.
When 17-year-old Chris Meyer came home sick, his parents thought he was coming down with the flu. A day later, the high school senior died from meningococcal meningitis. His mother, Leslie, is sharing his story to help avoid similar tragedies.
I never knew there was an infection that could kill a healthy child in less than 24 hours, but meningococcal meningitis can do that. Meningitis spreads through respiratory droplets, so being around other kids, sharing water bottles, and kissing can transmit the disease. I didn't know that a vaccine may have helped to prevent my family's tragedy. In honor of my son, Chris, I'm raising awareness about meningococcal vaccination so other families don't go through what we did.
The American Academy of Pediatrics recommends 2 doses of the MenACWY vaccine, the first at age 11 or 12, and a booster at age 16 when teens are at highest risk for meningococcal disease, which can be unpredictable and potentially devastating. This back-to-school season, discuss the importance of vaccination with your child's healthcare team. This message is sponsored by Sanofi.
My name is Judy Teeter, and I'm the mother of 3 boys. My youngest, Joe, was a great kid. He loves sports, music, and his youth group. One day, Joe asked me to drive him to an after-school event, which was about a mile from our home. I was driving through a green light when a car in cross traffic ran a red light and drove right into the side of our car, killing Joe. The driver was talking on her phone, so she never even saw the red light. She was so absorbed in her phone call. Before the crash, I didn't realize just talking on a cell phone while driving was so dangerous. Now it's something I think about every day. According to the National Safety Council, about 1 in 4 car crashes involves a cell phone. Hands-free is no safer. When you're behind the wheel, put away your phone. For Joe and for the thousands of needless deaths every year. Remember, there is no safe way to talk on a cell phone while driving. Find out more at nsc.org/callskill.
Take a look under your bed. Find stuff under there? What about jobs? No? Now try your basement. There's a pair of overalls that overall you're not so into anymore. A perfectly good laptop that hasn't sat in your lap in months. And even more stuff, but still no jobs? Well, you really have both. See, stuff is defined as household articles considered as a group. Sometimes this stuff is no longer needed. Wait, no longer needed? That can't be right. Because remember those jobs you were looking for? Those are really needed, and they're the stuff inside your stuff. Even inside that winter coat that moved with you to Phoenix. Our job is to unlock those jobs, and it starts when you donate your stuff to your local Goodwill. Here's how we do it. When you donate to Goodwill, we sell your stuff to provide job training for people right here in your community. So just by teaming up with Goodwill, you help create jobs. And isn't that worth parting with the leftover guitar from your 80s cover band? Goodwill. Donate stuff, create jobs. Find your nearest donation center at goodwill.org. A message from Goodwill and the Ad Council.
I'm Ben Affleck, and I want to thank you for joining me and supporting Paralyzed Veterans of America. Our vets need you.
I'm a quadriplegic. I'm definitely at risk with my diminished lung capacity.
I have MS. I'm in a wheelchair, and I can't leave the house because I have a compromised immune system.
I'm very concerned about, would there be a bed for me? Would there be a ventilator for me? Would I be able to survive something
it's just heavy. You know, it's a heavy moment.
This is a war. This really is.
Our veterans fought for us. Let's fight for them.
I am so grateful for the PVA. They're making sure that we have all of the food and supplies that we need right now.
We all gotta help each other right now. We can't get through this by ourselves.
It's with profound gratitude that you're gonna be saving our lives.
To find out how you can help, please go to helppva.org. That's helppva.org.
Welcome back to the Silver Joe Show, everybody. Co-host Joe this weekend with you all. I forgot to use the word here there, but that's okay. I have a memory like a rusty steel trap, which is why I forgot to use such a word. And we're waiting for our current guest. I didn't forget to book a guest. It's just that we're waiting for her. She was on the program last weekend too in this segment because, again, I have a memory like a steel trap. And I totally remembered she was there. And I totally did not accidentally book her 2 weeks in a row. Anyway. Well, we have her now joining us, Maria Keffler, former middle and high school teacher, co-founder of Advocates Protecting Children, and author of Desist, Detrans, and Detox, Getting Your Child Out of the Gender Cult. Maria Keffler, appreciate you joining us today. How are you?
Hi, I'm well, thank you. Thanks for having me back.
Yep, glad to have you back. And we're talking now about this list of 250 gender-affirming care groups that RFK Jr. has come up with. And these folks have been referring minors for gender-affirming surgery, possibly in violation of federal law. What do you see going on here?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. What is being done in the name of gender-affirming care is nothing but medical experimentation and butchery. These doctors have forgotten their call to do no harm, and they are damaging children. If you are sent to one of these gender clinics or to any practitioner who affirms a transgender identity, run the other way. There is no good end to that.
And I think the irony here is I was just talking with a guest from the Committee for a Constructive Tomorrow in the previous segment, and they had the study that was done of college students, and they found only 7% actually believe gender is a broad spectrum. So this is not at all a majority thing. This is not at all a movement that would require such a broad spectrum of support from all these healthcare providers. It is a very tiny group, yet it is being treated as if it's just the norm for the entire population.
Oh, yeah. It has been a very systematic rolling out of this cultural indoctrination. Mention even a question about believing gender, and you will get hit with all kinds of hate from the, you know, so-called kindness and tolerance people. There's nothing supporting this. There's no empirical data supporting it. There's just nothing. It's a house of cards that's been propped up, and people have been told, you know, they just have to say yes and amen to it, or risk, you know, having your friends and family cut you off, being canceled, losing your job. It's a multi-tentacled beast, but it really comes down to this just cultural indoctrination of people to accept it. And yes, most of us have enough common sense to know there are boys and there are girls, and they don't change places with each other.
Right. If you need excessive surgeries and medications to correct the way that you were born to something totally different and unnatural and needs to stay that way for the rest of your life, and it's something that's just not what humans have ever done in the history of humans, and you're now saying that this is natural because science can do it, I don't see how you can say that.
Well, and science can't do it. They're making these claims that you can transition sexes. There's a doctor right here, I'm just outside Washington, D.C., who claims on his website that he creates a faux vagina for a man. He does what's called a vaginoplasty that is aesthetic and functional. That's a lie. That is a lie. People who've been through this know it's a wound that never heals. It's a disaster. It's Frankenstein medicine. So no, they can't change people from one sex to the other. We never have been able to, and it's horrifying what they're doing to people.
Yeah, and even if you know, it even if somehow that serves your purpose, you still, it's not, it can't in any way be functional. You can't get pregnant through it. It's missing some of the core components of what makes a woman a woman.
Definitely. But even at just the most basic of levels, they're generally not functional genitals. People who've been through these surgeries talk about constant pain, drainage of fluids that shouldn't be there, smell. They have to, I hate to even talk about it too much. It's really stomach churning. But these are not successful surgeries.
I can relate a little bit. My previous housemate ended up going through such a surgery, and they did not do it correctly. So that required a trip to the emergency room and a specialist. So, but you don't hear about these risks.
Yeah, that's not unusual at all. And the informed consent model does not give enough information to people about what the possibilities for damage are with this. It's really just Frankenstein medicine.
Right. And it begs the question, how is it that these companies can, how is it these ideologies can get away with putting all this out? I mean, if a pharmaceutical company wants to put a new medication and wants to advertise it, they have to have the list of side effects. They'll get their butts sued to oblivion if they don't. But then with this, it's just like, oh yeah, come on, get this transition. Yeah, get it. There's no side effect at all. That's a lie. Or hormone replacement therapy. You can do that. There's no side effect to that. Or puberty blockers. There's no side effect to that. But it's an outright lie. There are. How are they getting away with this?
Well, that's a really good question. As I said before, it's a multi-tentacled beast. But And one problem is it is so horrifically unbelievable. Most people in the general population don't believe it's happening. This could not be happening. They could not be cutting breasts off of 12-year-old girls. They could not be cutting penises off 18-year-old boys. It just couldn't be happening. And so there's that, you know, kind of slipping it in the back door. And also there are lawsuits. Those lawsuits are coming. It's gonna be a cataclysm for these doctors at some point. And really, they're just trying to rake in as much money as they can, you know, while the getting is still good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and also, even amongst the supporters, there's this attitude of it's not really happening to the degree you're talking about. Like, I've seen, you know, on the one hand, you have Johns Hopkins University coming out back, 4 or 5 years ago, basically saying that if your child is 3 years old and doesn't rigidly adhere to gender stereotypes, you need to start working on transitioning them. And then yet you have others coming out and saying, well, I support this. And it's just fear mongering to say that people are saying 3 year olds need a transition when you have Johns Hopkins saying it.
I know. There's so much lack of logic in this ideology. On the one hand, they say this is a totally normal, natural, organic thing, yet we have to do all these surgeries. It's really unbelievable that anybody still buys into it.
Well, Maria Kethler, appreciate you joining the show again to talk about all this. Where can listeners get a copy of your book, Desist, Trans, and Detox, Getting Your Child Out of the Gender Cult?
You can get that at our website, advocatesprotectingchildren.org, also at Amazon and at Sophia Institute Press.
All right. Well, appreciate you joining the show. And listeners, our websites are mainstreetradionetwork.com and alannathan.com. And we're done with this hour of the program, so be seeing you.
The opinions you hear on the Main Street Radio Network are those of the hosts, callers, and guests, and not necessarily those of the station, Main Street Radio Network, its management, or advertisers. The information on the Main Street Radio Network does not constitute a recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or securities. Please consult a professional before investing. If you have any questions or comments about Main Street Radio Network, contact us at 703-978-0600 or at our website, mainstreetradionetwork.com.